Lindsay, and welcome to Behind the Screams. Today we're talking about the 2019 Netflix original, The Perfection. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ian and Lucy. How are you both?
Sup, bitch.
Hey.
This movie's from 2018.
No, actually, it at Fantastic Fest in Texas in 2018, and it was released on Netflix in 2019.
So 2018.
Get wrecked.
So 2018 movie.
Well, it was released in 2019.
It wasn't. Well, it was premiered in 2018.
Start this episode, Dave. Find someone.
Throwing hands in a second.
This is going to be an episode, isn't it?
All the astrological apps are like, the energies are all over the place, everybody is in an emotional minefield. I feel that in the depths of my little black soul.
Yep.
We're lucky to have fucking Lucy in this episode at all, to be honest with you.
Oh, I know, with the bloody technical issues I've had today, fucking hell.
Got Dave's background going on.
I know, it's a new scenery. I also have a great pun for you for this one, if you'd like, because I usually say a high something, but I did this just for Ian, you know, just because I love to torture him. So, roses are wet. Let me start.
You fucked it.
Roses are red, cellos are brown. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.
Oh, right. How do I kick Lucy out of this car? You know what?
You
see, when you said there, you were like, I've got a pun for you. I've instantly, in my head, was like, right, she set herself up for a big fall here. And somehow you managed to outdo yourself. Well done.
It's my talent.
I love a good Rickroll. Like, it just hits me every single time. Like, it hits my funny bone every single time. Love it.
Just gonna start doing it to our listeners.
What, a Rickroll?
Yeah, well, just 6 minutes into an episode, I'll just splice in, you know, Rick Astley.
I think it's spicy. It's going to be the perfect episode. There's so much manicotic energy going on today.
I keep saying it. This is gonna be an episode. You know how we keep saying, well, it was a film, this is gonna be an episode.
Indeed.
So if you like all this chaos, you can find us all over the damn internet. We are on Twitter, at Screams Behind. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Behind the Screams Podcast. We're on Twitch. Ian, what days do we stream on Twitch?
We've just updated our stream schedule, so we're no longer streaming on Mondays, and instead we're going to stream on Fridays. So you can get us on Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, all at 7 PM UK time. But these Fridays, and depending on how long Dave decides to go, because he just likes to beast through games just now, the Fridays and Saturday streams will generally go till late, so midnight and beyond, and probably till about 10:30, 11 o'clock on the other two.
So yeah, our Twitch channel is Behind the Screams Podcast, and we're also on TikTok, Behind the Screams Podcast. Ian is the man behind our social media, so you're most likely to catch him on there. Lucy, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on the interwebs at Lulu_Pew on Twitter and Twitch, and I stream on Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays.
So we're on Twitch every single day of the week, just about.
Pretty much,
yeah.
On a Friday, where me and Lucy just go head-to-head, making our listeners
battle.
Choose. Yeah, and pick one.
Which one
of
do
us.
You like better?
Me? I mean, even I like Lucy's streams better.
I was just about to say, you're the competitive one out of all of us, but thank you. Though
there
I did
no
get to...
It's not about the competition. We're only on there to enjoy our games and entertain anyone who comes into our channels. So that's what it's all about. I try not to look at the viewer count.
If you like to torture people, though, I have great fun torturing Ian on his streams. Oh, the sound alerts.
You know what? Like, because I was streaming Alien Isolation on Monday, and I thought I was going to be like just a mess, because the week before I'd done Man of Medan and I was a total fucking mess, mostly down to Dave, I must admit, but I was actually no too bad. I was a little disappointed in myself, to be honest. But it had been a day, okay,
yeah.
And I'm going to say more you about did good. My, I'm going to say more about my day in just a minute.
Fair enough. Yeah, you might as well just get into it now.
All right, so did I throw you off a little bit there? Let's
see. I was kind of trying to decide what direction I was going to take it in, but have the floor,
So as Lindsay so delightfully says, I'm kind of your person who's behind the social media, so barring Twitter on Saturdays when it's Lindsay. So yesterday, or not yesterday even, this thing spans like 3 fucking days. So not yesterday, but the day before. For those who follow us on our social media, they'll know that I often will post, you know, some questions and things all around horror movies. I'll ask you, you know, for people's opinions on certain movies. I'll ask for favourite movies from certain genres, blah, 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 that sort of thing. So the other day I'd posted the horror movies people use when they're feeling down to help cheer them up, because I'm sure all of us here and many, many of the listeners, if not all of our listeners, have a horror movie or something similar that cheers them up. And basically, this one person, I'm not going to name names because I don't feel like that's appropriate here. That's not really the platform for it. You could, the thread is still up on our social media. It's gotten a lot of responses. But basically this person told us and some of the other people who are commenting that we seem like people who should commit suicide. Now, I take great exception to this, and the reason that I'm bringing this up just now, because I really feel like mental health, suicide, and themes such as that are just ones that you cannot throw them about lightly. There's no humour to be had in these. We have all previously talked on this show as well about our own struggles with mental health, and you know, this is something that touches very, very close to all of our hearts. So I really, really just want to say that that is just unacceptable. We have built a community here, and I think we've built a really good community here. And one of our core values, if not one of our main core values, is to be really accepting and to be really welcoming to people who are, number one, who have got mental health issues, because that's something that touches us so close to our hearts as well. So that we find that really, really unacceptable. Now, I just really wanted to say that, and that I will always stand up against these people. I had a lot of people who were messaging me as well, saying things like, just ignore them, they're clearly just trolls, and all that jazz. And when I'm replying, I know I'm probably not going to change that person's mind. Like, I know that's not going to happen. But by replying, I feel like I'm letting other people know that this is unacceptable and that you shouldn't be doing it. And if it stops one person from potentially throwing around a mental health joke or a suicide joke or something like that that could be damaging to some people, then it will all have been worth it. And I just want to put on record as well, big thanks to all the people who came to our defense, because there was a lot of them as well. And you know, a couple of people were sharing really, really personal stories with me in direct messages. Again, obviously I'm not going to say names or anything like that, but some people were telling me some really personal stuff, and I really, really appreciate that. And that's part of the why I wanted to sort of address this, because you know, none of us are professionals, you know, so we're not going to sit here and give you professional advice or things like that, but we are all willing ears, and you know, people can talk to us, we have our own experiences, and you know, we can direct you towards professionals and numbers and helplines and things like that. So you know, our DMs are always open. I will never turn away someone who is struggling with mental health or anything like that. So I really just wanted to take a minute. I know this is really heavy at the start of what is meant to be, well, we like to think it's a funny podcast. I don't know if all of our listeners would agree with that, but I just wanted to take a minute to, number one, tell people that that's not okay, and that for anyone who's affected by mental health issues, that you know, they can come to us and they can talk to us anonymously if they want. Thank you.
Peton?
Fuck's sake. I think I'm going to have to be, am I?
No, I totally agree with what you were saying. Like, you can't throw around suicide as just a, like, it's something blasé that you can just, it's just something that rolls off your tongue. Like, it's a really serious thing. So many people have been affected by it, whether it's thinking about it, or if they've had family members, friends who have done it, it's, I don't think it's something that people should be throwing around. So no, I quite agree. And yeah, thank you to everybody else who's been sticking up for this, because yeah, it's just not on.
No, you, not at all. You thank you, everyone. And it's also quite, I don't know what I'm trying, I don't know what word I'm trying to use just now, but obviously this week as well, there's been the situation with Meghan Markle as well, and people not believing Meghan, who was brave enough to come out and say that she'd had suicidal thoughts and tendencies. And that is just, to tell somebody you don't believe them is absolutely ridiculous. Like you said, we've all had our struggles with mental health, and you know, you don't know what's going on in anyone's life. You don't know what they're going through. So a comment that you might put on a Twitter thread, or you might say something that it's in your head 5 seconds and then you don't think about it, could really affect somebody for weeks, months. It could potentially be really harmful to them. So yeah, just be kind to others. Treat people how you want to be treated. Don't be a fucking dick.
Yeah,
there we go.
I mean, in terms of relation to that, because that's obviously, I know we're going off on a big tangent here. I feel like I'm going to have a few tangents tonight. But in terms of that as well, I saw quite a few people posting this, that, you know, Meghan Markle's not going to see your comments, but your brother or your sister or your friend or your husband or your wife or your mum or your dad or your children who are suffering from mental health will. And they will never, ever come to you for assistance if they are struggling. Like, just, people just need to learn to be more careful with the words that they use, because they need to realise the effects that that can have on people. So
yeah, people are like, sorry, people are like, oh, it's just a word, it's just this, it's just that. Like, there's so much power in words. Like, there's a reason why, like, people try to silence people. It's because words are powerful. And then, you know, there's that saying, like, the pen is mightier than the sword. Like, your words have the ability to really affect people, so you should think about what you're saying.
Absolutely. Whew. Do I feel better? I don't even know, to be honest.
Can I talk about a film that I like now? Please.
You'll be the only one. Anyway. Oh.
Shots fired.
Such a sassy pants today. Jesus.
Just makes a change.
Today?
Makes a change from it being used to.
We're allowed.
It's
one of the
sessions. Exactly.
On you go then. Fill your boots.
So, like I said at the start of the episode, we're talking about the Netflix original, The Perfection. You two hadn't seen it before today, had you?
No, I saved it for this morning. I watched it about 5 hours ago, so it's like fresh in my head.
And I watched it last night.
Just kind of before we get into the spoiler territory, like, did it meet your expectations? Like, do you think it was wanted in my number one spot in my underrated horrors that we did last summer?
Okay, right, here we go. So, I first want to say, start off by saying that you built this fucking film up so fucking high that I went in with such high expectations. Like, this film had to go for it to be like, for me to be like, oh yeah, I can exactly see. So I felt like I maybe went into this with just a little bit too high expectations, right? I can fully understand why you think it's an underrated movie, and I can fully appreciate many of the themes that are discovered, like, are talked about in this movie and that are discussed in this movie. I don't agree with it being your number one most underrated horror film. Lucy's like, oh shit. But I did enjoy the movie. I like it. I would rewatch it, and I would recommend it.
Good. We're still friends. Good.
we were friends.
I really like the movie. When I tell you, my jaw hit the floor. I like messaged the both of you in between that movie. I know we'll get to it, but I had to tell someone. I was like, what in the first shock that we have. There is, like, we'll get into it. There is a couple issues I have of the way that they deal with really heavy subject matters. Like, thinking about it after I watched it and then seeing other people's responses about the way it deals with certain things, I was kind of like, it probably could have been done with a bit more sensitivity maybe. But overall, I did like this movie. Like, I've not seen anything like this before in terms of the plot. Like, yeah.
Just to sort of come back on that, I just want to add that the issues that I do have around this movie are more to do with the plot and certain plot holes rather than the themes and stuff like that that it deals with itself. That's more a sort of technical things that I have issues with.
Okay. Well, that being said, that's it, episode, guys. No, I'm joking.
I will hope you'll join us next time.
Don't bother. So, with that being said, let's get into the film.
Oh, we weren't.
I'm burning up.
It's gonna be okay.
Oh, it's not. Oh, God, it's not. Listen to me. Something is wrong. Something is wrong with me.
Lizzie, I know. That's why we need to get you help.
I'm dying. I'm dying. What's happening? What's happening?
Oh, my God.
What's happening?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I don't know!
Mom, what the fuck? Look who you are! It's Bugs! Help me! Help me, Bugs! Help me!
You know what you have to do?
So, this film was released on Netflix in May 2019. It was directed by Richard Shepherd and stars Alison Williams and Logan Browning. The IMDb plot is as follows. When troubled music protege Charlotte seeks out Elizabeth, the new star pupil of her former school, the encounter sends both musicians down a sinister path with more shocking consequences. So I feel like that is a good description for the film. I have felt like in coming up to this and people like you have been like, oh, tell us about the film. And it's like, it's really hard because there's so many twists. And if I even told you any more than that, the film's ruined completely. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think this is a really difficult movie to explain to someone who's not seen it without entirely spoiling it. Just because of the nature of the film. Like, there's actually so little of this film where, you know, you have that sort of setup, you know, because the original, what is it, like 15, 20 minutes before, you know, shit's really starting to hit the fan. Mm. And Lizzie's being unwell on the bus, for example. Obviously, we get everything that happens before that. But there's so little setup. And because almost every scene after that is kind of vital to the overall sort of plot and what they're going for, because of the nature again of the sort of flashbacks and things like that, it does make it really difficult to explain to someone who hasn't seen it.
And you don't want to give it away, because like I think a big selling point of this movie and part of its charm is like how shocked you are. Like the surprise and the twists are such a big part of it that you don't want to give that away, because it'd be a real shame, because you don't expect it. It's not often that I like my jaw drops and I don't expect something, and it definitely did this like the whole time. I was like, sorry, you can't see it if you're listening, my jaw hit the floor, so yeah. Sound effect.
To see it you're just gonna have to subscribe to the Patreon.
Yeah, pay £5, you can see Lucy's shocked face.
So, people might pay it for that, right? Right. So, Can I just sort of jump in here with my first sort of issue?
Ian, it's my
session,
but don't interrupt me. I'm
like an episode. You've not started. You didn't even say that. How can I interrupt you when you've not said anything?
Like, excuse me, I'm a man and I need to talk right now. What do you want to say, for fuck's sake?
I've lost my place now. So see that nice thing I said about you on Twitter today? Last week, forget it.
Hi. I'm just standing in the corner.
She's just like slowly lowering her chair.
I know.
Carry on, Lindsay. I'll get to my point when it's my
well,
turn.
Well, I was gonna say that given the nature of the film and all the twists and turns, I was gonna suggest that we go through the film chronologically because I feel like that makes a bit more sense.
Okay.
So at the start of the film, we are shown Charlotte at home with her mother. Her mother's just passed away, and there's a bit of discussion in the background between her aunts as to what she's going to do. And then we're introduced to this chapter system that kind of breaks up the film a bit. So the first one is mission. And I feel like this should show us that something's going to happen because like mission implies like some shit's going to go down. But anyway, like Charlotte seeks out Anton and Paloma. We're not really sure, quite sure why at first. And she heads to Shanghai to seek them out. And she meets them, and then we notice straight away this scarring on her arms. So, like, straight away we're kind of like, there's something a bit more going on here. What did you think about that?
I didn't notice the scarring on her.
Did you not?
No,
I had. Straight off from the bat, like, I don't often get emotional at horror movies. I have to admit that I actually cried at this just because of, like, it's the start of, I don't want to say too much because we're going to give it away later, but at the start, you think it's Charlotte's mum that's dealing with certain, we know it's health issues, but we think it might be mental health issues as well. And that's something that hits very close to home for me. I think I'm quite open about it when I say, you know, I've got a mum that's very sick that I've been taking care of. So that really kind of hit home. And I think immediately you feel for Charlotte straight away. Like you really bond with her character, or at least I do anyway. But yeah, nothing's given away at the start. We don't know why she's gone to Shanghai. We don't know if she is like a cellist or what's kind of going on. So it's really shot really well. And like the Shanghai scenes as well, it's so beautiful. I know that's a little bit off topic, but it's done. It's so stunning.
Yeah, definitely. Like even like just slightly before that, when she's looking up at the poster of Lizzie, and it's just so beautiful, really. So yeah, she meets Anton Paloma again, and then she's introduced to Lizzie. And straight away, there's just a lot of like chemistry there, a lot of admiration for each other as well. They're both very, very talented musicians, clearly, as we find out. And there's just so much love there, like straight away, because they've both been through the same thing. At this point, we just think it's like the really difficult schooling and being proteges, because like the first time I watched this film, I was thinking about like what it's really like to be a protege. There's so much pressure on you. Like you give up your childhood essentially. And then especially if you think of like child geniuses, when they're children, they're like, you're amazing, and they're built up so high. And then they get to be adults and they're professors in universities, and they're just like everyone else there. So they end up having like a lot of mental health issues, a lot of self-esteem issues, because they've been built up so much throughout their childhood, and then they're just like their peers when they're older. It's really sad, actually. Like, I just couldn't help but feel sorry for them both, like throughout this whole film, like even without the twist at the end, just thinking about what they sacrificed to get to the level of talent that they're at. I don't know if I could put a child through it myself, but that's just me.
No, that's very true. And I think as you said, Lindsay, not even just the, you know, they're put up on a pedestal and then it almost comes crashing down once they're out of their adolescence, but also, you know, when we're kids, that's when we develop our social skills and we learn how to be around other people Whereas if they've been taken at such a young age and they're put in this whole different world and their whole life is sleep, eat, breathe, music, grind, work hard, they're not really going to have kids that they can relate to. Or if they do, it's just other kids that are in the exact same boat as them. So I can imagine that feels really isolating as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Alison Williams' character does kind of speak to that a little bit later in the film about just how she doesn't really have friends or anything. So we're in Shanghai because Anton and Paloma, Theus and Jeffrey are looking for their next protege. They're auditioning four girls, is it? To see who they're going to take back to Boston to be their next protege. And he invites Lizzie and Charlotte to be on the judging panel. And they have this really playful conversation, which I find to be a bit ironic because it shows that Lizzie's very perceptive. She notices just by looking at people that two of the parents are having an affair. But I think it also speaks to later on in the film, you kind of think, oh, why didn't you notice what was happening to you? But grooming kind of overtakes those perceptive aspects of yourself. So you're not going to notice if you're in a situation where, you could be getting abused. And this is very obviously the pair of them flirting. What did you make of Lizzie's flirting techniques?
Can I just say, I need to take a minute. How stunning is Logan Browning? She is so hot. She actually takes my breath away. I just needed that moment. I just need a moment to appreciate how stunning she is. And the chemistry between them is so good. It's on fire.
It's so believable. They are the power couple that you never knew you needed in your life.
I'll finish Thurston over here. Ian, what do you think? Because I'm just going to talk about how hot she is for about an hour and a half.
Just wondering when I was going to get brought back into the conversation, to be honest. After my little spell in the naughty corner there. Just before I sort of come on to that, I just want to speak to the scene you were talking about earlier when Charlotte is arriving in Shanghai and you see Lizzie plastered all over the sides of buildings and things like that. And then even when they first meet, not the scene where they're judging, but that very first initial interaction, I got something completely different from you guys, because in my notes I've just got Charlotte hates Elizabeth. And I thought straight off the bat, because obviously I was watching this with Kari, and I was like, they're going to try and kill each other. That's what's going to happen here. That's where I was at. And so when obviously we'll talk about the scene off the bus later in the movie, I was just like, fucking called it. But then obviously a later twist happens. So I was half right. I was half right, okay? But I obviously the chemistry when we get to those scenes where especially, when they're doing the judging and they're sort of watching these two parents slyly try and have this affair in the least sly manner. I mean, this woman just grabs this guy's dick.
I know! Oh, Jesus fucking Christ!
Her husband and
does she not know any subtlety whatsoever?
They're trying to be subtle, but she basically pushes folk out the road and is just hand on deck.
I know, and then she kind of goes to her husband I'm just over here, and then she just ropes this man.
So I was okay then. I don't know how they do things in China, okay? Maybe that's subtle. I don't know. But yeah, the chemistry, and then obviously you get this sort of slightly montage scene of them partying and having sex and all that jazz. And yeah, the chemistry is definitely there. And I think it has to be, because otherwise, obviously that was... I've got my notes about them hating each other, but that definitely sort of started to throw me off. It wasn't until later on when the hand scene happens where I was a bit like, oh no, so I was right. But while all this is happening, I'm sitting there going, oh, I was way fucking off, wasn't I? So it did throw me quite a lot. But yeah, the settings are really good. I think I think the cinematography in this movie in general is actually really good, and I think that's maybe one of the big aspects of this movie that could be considered underrated, because I don't think that anyone really talks about it, to be honest.
No.
You know, people talk about the twists, people talk about the themes. The cinematography in this movie, I think, is pretty stunning. Like, there's some beautiful, beautiful shots in it.
Can we also appreciate as well the relationship between Lizzie and Charlotte? We're talking about the chemistry and things there. Like, it doesn't feel like it's over-sexualized. I know we get the sex scenes. I don't know if you guys think this as well, but I think it's done tastefully as well. Even there's this chemistry between them. I think they're great scenes. It's not like, you know, we were speaking about Carrie last week and we have these pan shots of these girls in showers that are about 15 minutes fucking long.
There was no bush bonanza this week.
No, there wasn't.
No, I think you're absolutely right, because how many times have you watched a sex scene, or if you've even watched like a straight couple and they're kissing and they're like lingering on the noises and the look, and you're just watching it and you're actually just a little bit disgusted by it, and it's just like, oh, like, get this off my screen. I thought they did this quite, like you say, quite tastefully. It wasn't overly explicit. I don't think there was actually any nudity at all. Like, I don't think we actually saw any nude scenes. Like, obviously you've got backs and things like that, but like, that's fine. No, I'm saying that it wouldn't be fine, but you know, so it was definitely done. Get that back away.
Scandalous.
Is that a bit of shoulder you just showed there? But yeah, I thought it was, I agree. It's just a long, long-winded way of me saying, yes, Lucy, I agree.
But it just, you know what we've been talking before, like in the LGBT plus history about stream and stuff like that, the over-sexualization of women, and specifically same-sex relationships, lesbians, bi women. I just thought it was done really well, and I thought we should give them props for that.
What I liked about it was that it wasn't, and we've talked about this, you know, how many times have you got a gay character on screen and that's their personality trait, whereas in this movie it was they're together as a non-straight couple. It was never it doesn't need to be addressed. It wasn't addressed. Like, it doesn't need to be. It was fine. Just get on with the movie.
Another thing I just want to note before we move on is like the kind of introduction of that grooming and almost cult-like language just before they go out on the town. I kind of feel like in hindsight, the conversation they have on the balcony, like Charlotte is sense checking Lizzie and being like, is she on my level or is she not about Anton, or is she as brainwashed as I was? And Lizzie turning around and saying, you know, it's what's expected of us. And this line is repeated throughout the film. Like, they're all groomed. Even the teachers are all groomed into saying, like, this is what's expected of us. So I quite like that little introduction of that.
It's just foreshadowing that not everyone might pick up on. And I love a bit of foreshadowing.
Oh,
it's
good.
And even, like, the shot of the... It's in that scene, isn't it? You get the shot of the tattoo. Is it Charlotte's one?
Yes.
The tattoo, right? They could have picked a more fucking creative tattoo. Because any Tom, Dick or Harry could walk into a tattoo shop and be like, I want a musical note.
I don't think it's like the musical note tattoo. I think it's more about how abusers use tattoos as a way of marking their victims and saying, you belong to me.
It's a branding,
rather
isn't
than,
it?
Yeah, it's branding rather than it being something unique. It's the fact that they done it, not the actual symbol itself.
Okay, well, it was just another point off for Anton for his lack of uniqueness.
Not the fact he did it in the first place, okay.
I said another point. We haven't gotten on to that yet. Make me into some sort of abuser sympathiser.
What did we think of the kind of like red herring storyline at the start as well? Like, I believe the trailer kind of paints the picture that this is like a Contagion type film, and there's certainly that idea shoehorned in at the start with the man being sick at the party and people are talking about the virus at Hunan, and that's what Lizzie thinks is happening to her on the bus. Like, what do we think of this? Do we think it was necessary?
Like, can I just fine, say, like, Hunan, very similar sounding to Wuhan.
I know.
Yes.
The Illuminati is real, people.
I feel like it almost sets it up, well, at least for me anyway, those first few scenes in Shanghai, it sets up to be a completely different movie from what it is. I think that's part of the plot as well, because when I was first watching this, I didn't know anything about it. I thought it was going to be a virus or some form of, yeah, a virus, and it, like, say it's contagious. I thought that was what the premise was going to be, in all honesty, especially when we get to the bus scenes. But I feel like, I don't know if it's just because I haven't picked up on it, but, like, I feel like that's almost a bit of a loophole, because, like, we don't really know what happens to that guy, do we? We don't know the reasons. Well, they say this virus, but he was really bloody sick. Like, mm. I don't know. It seems like a coincidence.
Awesome. We've all had that one tequila too many, right? It just pushes you right over the edge. So, like, unlike Lucy, I hadn't even seen the trailer for this movie before I seen it. So I didn't know that they had red herringed it as a contagion type movie. And after the sort of scene where Lizzie and Charlotte get together, at that point I'm like, I don't fucking know what's going on in this movie. Like, I don't know what this movie's meant to be. I don't know what, like, the plot is. I don't know who the bad guy is. Like, I was totally thrown for a loop. And then, like Lucy said, you know, you get those scenes on the bus where, you know, she's got the worms or the maggots or whatever it is in her vomit, and then your mind immediately goes to, oh, this must be some sort of contagion type movie, because we, like you said, we'd seen the guy at the party be violently sick. It looked chunky. Like, his sick looked chunky, I'm sorry. Like, it looked thick. It looked more like a paste than vomit. And I have thrown up enough times on a night out to know my vomit types.
Conspiracy theory here. Do you guys think that Charlotte on... Well, this is a spoiler anyway. But do you think Charlotte was the one that made him sick? Do you think she maybe spiked his drink so he could be sick and then put those ideas into Lizzie's mind?
If that's what they were going for, I feel like there's too many plot holes in that, because number one, she wouldn't be able to guarantee the exact time that he was sick. Like, so she wouldn't know that she would be able to put that into Lizzie's. Like, I feel like it's a possibility, but I feel like if that's what the director was going for, I feel like that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, the conclusion of the mission, our first chapter of the film, is, like, the camera panning to Charlotte's tattoo. So we see that Lizzie and Charlotte have the same tattoo, and it makes you kind of think, what's going on? So we go into Detour, and this is where I kind of had my, there's something not right here, because, right, they're both hungover, totally normal. Charlotte offers Lizzie ibuprofen. I was about to call it what I call it, which isn't right, but ibuprofen.
What do you call it, Lindsay? Because I also don't call it the right thing.
I call it ibuprofen.
I call it ibuprofen as well. I fucking do. That's what it is.
I call them pink. I call them painkillers. And Carly always goes to me, there are no painkillers, the ibuprofen.
So Charlotte offers Lizzie ibuprofen. And I see these pills, and I'm like, that is the only ibuprofen I've ever taken. Like, well,
weren't they like brown?
They were brown, they were massive. I was just like, there's something going on here. Like, straight away. Like, I don't know if you guys picked up on that at all.
I hadn't clocked it.
I noticed that they were brown, but it didn't really register with me. I kind of just threw it away, like, oh, it must just be, like, Chinese ibuprofen or something like that, you know. Like, I just in my head thought, oh well, it must just be different there than it is here. Like, I saw it and it definitely registered, but I just sort of dismissed it.
Okay.
Which clearly I shouldn't have.
We just don't pick up on things, Ian. That's what it is.
What the fuck are we doing here, Lucy? I'm like, I didn't even see the scars. Don't know what you're speaking about. There was cellos in this film.
What's that?
So they're kind of morning, like afternoon, whatever time of day it is, kind of plays out as normal. Like, we've all kind of been there, or, you know, if you don't drink, like, you've known someone to have this hangover from hell. Like, Lizzie just feels terrible. Like, you know, they get the food and she's just looking at it like, no, this isn't going to satisfy me. I was feeling particularly sorry for her when she's getting onto the bus and she's feeling like really sick because I've gotten on a bus like maybe that wee bit too soon after a night out and just spewed my ringer in the bus toilet.
I feel like I've seen you go on a bus after a night out. Like feeling like death. I'd be like, oh, bye, Lindsay. No better.
Look at the fucking joy in her face. She's so happy. She's remembering good times. I felt so bad for Lizzie at this point. Yeah. Like, what I will say is, when I was watching the scenes, I turned to Carrie again and I was like, she's drinking that water way too quickly. That's just going to slosh about in her stomach and it's going to make her feel even worse because she downs two full bottles of water. One thing, this is one of the detours that I want to take, because I want to know everyone's fucking hangover cures, right? Because I have like four different potential hangover cures, right? Because sometimes, right, don't you find that sometimes, specifically with food, sometimes like a good, like a bacon butty or something will just sort you right out. But and then at other times, even just the whiff of it and you're spewing up in the toilet, you know, like it's very 50-50 me with food and hangover cures.
I have a very specific process for hangovers. Well, it depends. If it's a wine hangover, I'm going to crawl in a hole and die for 2 days. But if it's any other hangover, I need to have pink Lucozade and then a pot noodle and bread.
What kind of pot noodle?
To soak it all up. Oh, chicken and mushroom, babes, all right, always.
That's all right. I would substitute your pink Lucozade for orange Lucozade, because orange Lucozade is the king. And we all know as Scottish people that Iron Brew is one surefire way to cure everyone's hangovers, right?
Aye.
Lindsay, what's your, like, hangover routine?
I don't really have a hangover routine as such. I'm one of those really annoying people. I don't always get a hangover. I didn't get my first hangover until I was, like, 24. And it was when I was on holiday in Tenerife, and it was one of the worst days of my life.
It is, it gets that fucking bad, right? I'm like you, I don't really get hangovers anymore, but up until, like, it's only beer now that really gives me a hangover. Yeah. If I'm drinking anything else, I tend to be okay, and, like, especially if I'm drinking rum, I'm usually, like, fresh as a daisy. And those are the best times. There's nothing better than getting absolutely steaming and waking up the next day and being fresh as a daisy, right? Because you feel like you've won the fucking lottery. But
I'm very carbs the next day. Like, yeah. One of my favourite things is like a crisp roll, loads of butter, all the carbs.
What kind of crisps though? This is important. I know this is way off tangent, but I need to know.
What have I done?
I like roast chicken ones.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Who even are you?
What would you put in?
We'd go cheese and onion all the way.
Cheese and onion is a good option as well. It has to be the, like one of those two. Really.
Or prawn cocktail.
I'm not. Do you know, I used to hate prawn cocktail, but now I actually quite like them.
Okay, sorry, listeners.
I know this is really exciting, but yeah, I'm all about milkshakes as well when I'm hungover.
I said that today. I was like a strawberry milkshake out of McDonald's, and I was like, that'll sort you right out. Only day of the week. I'm with you.
Aye, but that's if the machine's bloody working.
Ah, well, that's true. Aye. Anyway.
So, we're on the bus machine with Lizzie. And poor Lizzie starts to feel bloody terrible. And again, I just feel heart sorry for her because she's like, I need to go to the toilet. There's no toilet on this bus. I don't know what I would have done. Like, how are you guys feeling at this moment?
Well, I was getting confused, right? Because she's sitting there and she's going, I'm dying, I'm dying. And in my head, I'm like, is she really dying? Because I've been lying on the settee with a hangover thinking that I'm dying. Or is she actually dying? Like, I got we've done it, right?
I'm just thinking about the times when I've got the blanket over my head.
Like, you ever get, like, you'll be in bed, you'll be on the settee, right? And you've got, like, the hot sweats. And you kind of get comfy, so you're tossing and you're turning and your head's pounding every time you move. And you move slightly and you think, oh, back to the toilet. Like, we've all been there. So I wasn't sure at all if she was actually just hungover to fuck or if she was actually dying.
But it's also like, I almost, I didn't predict that she was thinking she was going to share stuff, but I got worried that was going to happen. It's like, what do you do in that moment? That bus has no toilet. She's got nothing she can use. You know, nobody. They can't communicate with anybody on the bus because obviously they don't speak Mandarin.
My arse would just be out the window. Like, you'd be driving past, I'd be full. I wouldn't even care. Like, cause there's no way, right? There's no way I'm shitting on the bus. So I'll just shit in the side of it instead.
This has just reminded me of the car journey back from the St. James
Wednesday. Stop it.
Oh my god. What
an experience that was. Well, all the other people on the bus in the movie was how I felt on that trip. I think we've lost Lindsay.
Oh my god.
I'm actually crying.
You know,
I didn't think this would be a funny episode at all.
You had our pal hanging out the window, spewing a ringer up in one end. I'm hanging out the other window, trying to not let her spew and make me spew at the other end.
She also threw up right in front of the venue in the morning.
I remember that. Not even like discreetly at the side, it was on the doorstep.
I love our friends.
Oh dear. Oh. But yes, anyways, I'd be shitting at the side.
I can actually picture it as well. I don't know why.
What would you do? You gotta go, and I'm not shitting on the bus. Come on.
I don't even pee outside, like I won't have in until I get to a toilet. That's like the one thing I'm like, absolutely not.
What's the like public urination defecation laws in China?
Like, I don't know. Well, I can kill you for anything out there, so I don't know. No, but then, like, you get the death penalty for so much in China. Like, you get hand cut off for stealing a tiger and that. Like, it's pretty mental. It's true!
For those who are watching the audio version only, Lucy is now officially crying with laughter.
Sobbing from laughing.
So Lucy, is your arse gone out the window?
Well, I can't say I was that inventive, but you know what? You've got no other fucking choice, have you?
Exactly!
I just feel sorry. Imagine if there's a driver behind you, though.
A cyclist on the way past.
Stop it. Oh my god.
Imagine looking at your wing mirrors and just seeing that in the background. Fucking dollops of shit coming down the side of the window. can we do like a 6 minute long promo clip for this episode?
It's up to you, you did them. Where's my water?
The answer is no then.
So they're on this bus, we've just described, like, it seems very distressing, the idea of potentially shitting yourself on the bus. So Lizzie having an absolute canary fit.
If I move, I'll shit. just like edging her way towards the front of the bus, and then the bus driver's a dick, right? Slamming on the brakes. I'm surprised shit didn't hit his windshield, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
What? The fucking.
He's taking a drink. I nearly died.
Even though this is, like, obviously a really serious movie, it's the waddle that she does as well. It's the waddle.
And then, you know what's worse, right? And I know we were never ever going to get to see it, right? But she did a really disappointing poo.
It's only a wee drop.
It was only a wee bit. Like, I was like, is that it? Was that what all the fuss was about then?
So she has her shite. She gets back on the bus and she goes to sleep for a bit, but then she wakes back up again. She spews, there's bugs in it. It's fucking fluorescent yellow as well, which I think is terrifying enough.
It's like fucking guacamole.
I know. She spews everywhere. She's screaming. She's screaming at it, she starts hitting her head off the windows, and then the bus driver is just like, fucking fuck this, and like yeets her off the bus.
Can I just say, if she'd opened the window to shit out, she wouldn't have had nothing to smash her head off.
Yeah, but she tries to open the window at one point, and then it just doesn't open.
But she's in a faff.
I don't think they open.
She's in a panic.
She's in a bit of a flap.
I like when she gets back on the bus that one of them gives her a mask as well.
Yeah, and the guy's like, it's more for them than you, because like, they're scared of her.
But they're proper, like... Even though they're all, like, hanging out the window themselves, because they're obviously disgusted, they're proper helpful, because, like, when they get kicked off...
They are, so nice to her.
Because then they get kicked off, like, one of them hands her, like, two bottles of water, they give her the mask, so, like, they're very friendly people, they just don't want to
die. Give her directions as well, I think.
Yeah, the guy that's actually helping them, or the guy that speaks to the driver for them, he kind of helps them, I guess.
So now that they've been chucked off the bus, we're kind of... going towards the first big shock of the film. So, Lizzie's still hysterical, obviously. She keeps talking about her brain being on fire. She keeps thinking there's, like, bugs, like, running around inside her. Charlotte's trying to reassure her. And then they get to this point where you can see something moving around in Lizzie's arm. And then they burst out. And Charlotte tells her, the only way to stop it is to cut her hand off. Like, what, how did you feel when you watched this scene for the first time?
I love the effects. The effects look fucking good. Like, the bugs under her skin looked really cool, and the bugs coming out. And the fact that, like, what really freaked me out as well is the fact that they're still, like, having this back and forth conversation. All in the meantime, there's these fucking bugs just, like, oozing out her arm. And I was just like, holy fucking shit. And when the twist happened and we find out that Charlotte's just wanted her to chop her own hand off, a little bit of me was like, oh, so I was right at the beginning. But it's definitely, you know, I'd definitely been completely thrown off by everything that had come before that. And so this ended up being quite a good shock.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. The effects are really good. I think I like the fact that, is it not in this first... Because we get flashbacks to all these key scenes later on, but you don't actually see it happening in this bit, do you? It just cuts before she does it, right?
Yes, I think you're right, yeah.
I think that's quite good.
Yeah, definitely. Because up until this, you're like, what the fuck's going on? Like, is this... Because at this point, you are literally going there, is this a Contagion movie? Is this not a Contagion? Because obviously, after this, we then get the flashback to what happens. But I was just like, I don't fucking know. Like, I was just hands in the air. I didn't have a fucking clue what was going on at this point.
So we get the cut, Lizzie's car hand off, and then the film reverses, and we see everything we didn't see the first time. What did you think about that kind of side of it? Because I know some people don't like the reverse aspect of this film.
I quite liked it because we haven't, number one, we don't get it. Like, we don't get it in horror films, or films in general, and I think we should do more of it, because most horror fans like seeing behind-the-scenes type shit, and it's sort of like the film, obviously not in real life, but it's letting you into the behind-the-scenes of the film's actions, you know what I'm saying? Like, you get to see, oh, well, it wasn't really ibuprofen, and you get to see that it doesn't really work well with alcohol, and you see her taking the cleaver and all that. I really liked it, because I kind of like mysteries, and then finding out what actually happens.
What did you think, Lucy?
I really liked it as well. I think, like, even though it's such a twist, I feel like, okay, you'd have this big reveal that, you know, it's Charlotte's ploy all along, but to actually see the process and what she did, I think it makes it more compelling and it's more shocking for you, rather than just being told and then they move on. Like you say, it shows you things that you might have missed at the start, and I think it just adds to the drama of it all, so I really liked it. And it's different. We'd never really get this. So
one of the things I like as well is because there was a certain point when I was watching this and I would be like, right, okay, I get what they're gone for here, but how would Charlotte be able to know that she's going to hallucinate bugs in her vomit? How does she know she's going to hallucinate bugs under her skin? But she foreshadows it. She puts it in her mind, because when she's, like, getting on the bus, she puts it in her mind that she's already got bugs on her.
Yeah, and talking about how dirty the bus is.
Exactly. So she's putting it in, and I thought that was quite clever. When I was watching it initially, I was like, how would she know that? You know, like, because that seemed like a bit of a stretch. That seemed like a bit of a jump. But when you actually think about it, it's actually very clever.
So the first time I watched this film, like at this point, I was like, when you were saying at the start, oh, Charlotte and Lizzie hate each other. This was when I was like, oh my God, like Charlotte hates Lizzie. She thinks Lizzie stole her life. She's there to take revenge on Lizzie. Like she hates her. She had to stay at home and look after her mum while Lizzie got all the success that she was supposed to have. Like, did you think something similar or something different?
I thought the same. So at the start we mentioned, well, at least for me anyway, we thought this was going to be a Contagion film, and then we have that twist, and I thought the whole twist was going to be that Charlotte is the villain, and it was going to be, yeah, like you say, this whole jealousy thing. But then we get another twist and we find out that Charlotte actually isn't the victim. Charlotte isn't the villain. Charlotte is actually a victim, and so is Lizzie. So I thought that was done really well.
Yeah, I thought we were going to be set up now for just a revenge movie, and halfway through the film, and I thought the second half of the film was just going to be Lizzie trying to get her revenge on Charlotte, and because really at this point I'd kind of forgotten that the other people had even existed, because they're kind of a non-factor in the film up until this point, even though that Anton and Paloma are total dicks at the actual competition, because they're like forcing her to perform and stuff like that, and it's like, leave her the fuck alone. But then obviously we find out much later that there's a lot more sinister intent behind that. I at this point was just like, ah, it's just gonna be a revenge movie now, and I'm glad that it wasn't, because I think if it had been, I'd have been a bit bored by it, to be honest.
So we move on to the next chapter of the film called Home, and this is where we actually go to Back Off Academy. So this is where Lizzie and Charlotte were proteges. This is where Anton, Paloma, Theus and Jeffrey all work, and this is where Zhang Li, the wee lassie that won the competition, is going to be for her four-year scholarship. So on a second watch, this scene is kind of interesting to me, and it made me think about other like real life things that we'll probably talk about a bit later on, but grooming behaviour is not just for children, it extends to so many people around that. Like, how many times when someone is like outed as being one of these kind of abusers, it's like, they never seemed like they were going to be like that. Their MO is being charismatic. Their MO is making you think they're a nice person. And Zhang Li's mother is like so grateful to these people for like looking after her daughter. And they're like, oh, this is such an honour and stuff. And it's like, if she only knew that she was just, wee Zhang Li's like a lamb to the slaughter to these people. So I thought that was a really interesting aspect of it on a second watch and a third watch. How they use that same behaviour to groom Zhang Li's mum, as well as Zhang Li and all the other wee girls that they've done it to in the past.
It's not just, like, when you're talking about grooming as well, like you're saying, it doesn't just affect the person that's being groomed too. It affects their relatives, their friends, you know, their potential partner, like, just whoever's around them, because these people will then, you know, blame themselves as well for not noticing signs, or thinking to themselves, you know, how could I not spot something sooner as well. Poor wee Zhang Li as well, because like you say, she's totally oblivious, even right up until the very end when, you know, like they're going through the big final performance, she's still sitting there and she tells Charlotte that was wonderful, and you're like, and we know that Anton doesn't think that was so wonderful, you know. Just on a separate note, I want to know why, like, cellists in China have their own... It was like fucking Charles Xavier's school for the gifted. You know, they had this big fuck-off mansion, and it was like, what? Like, that kind of was just like, I've never heard of that, to be honest with you. That was a bit, anyway.
What do you mean?
Well, like, I didn't realise that you could get sent away. Like, is that a thing? People go to, like, China just to learn how to play the cello?
But they don't go to China. They the Back Off Academy have gone to China to scout for Chellis, and Zhang Li's been brought to Boston.
Oh, you see, I thought they were still in China.
No. There is a card that comes up that says 3 weeks later, Boston.
Oh, never mind. I got a bit confused there. Scratch that point then. My bad. I just threw my pen away. I need another one. Anyways,
quit over something.
Sorry. Back to my original point is that, you know, up until this, like, obviously you were talking about earlier how, you know, there's Charlotte was sort of like sussing Lizzie out to see whether she was on the sort of same level as her.
Mm.
But, you know, I didn't really pick up on that at the time because I didn't know where this fucking film was going, so, you know, I wasn't really looking out for it. It's certainly a big surprise to me. I'm certainly not expecting that plot line.
I will say in this film that it's definitely worth giving it a second watch because there's so many times you think a performance is actually one thing but it's actually something completely different. So there's actually one that I'm gonna get onto just after this little bitty. So obviously when we're getting introduced, Shanley's getting introduced around the academy, we are introduced to the chapel, which is meant to be this acoustically perfect performance room. Nothing in the film is offhand, but it just seems very offhand at the moment, but it plays a very important role in both Charlotte and Lizzie's lives and in the conclusion of this film. So we skip ahead to the night, and Lizzie arrives back at Back Off Academy. She's been missing for 3 weeks, and Anton finds her there. And this is one of the performances where on a first watch you think it's one thing, and on a second watch you know it's something else. So, like, I felt like the first time I watched it, when he's like shouting, "Where is your hand?" he seemed concerned. But on the second watch, he's not concerned, he's raging, because she is of no use to him anymore. What do you think of that?
I am the exact same boat. So I rewatched it again today. Like it was in the background. I gave it a proper watch yesterday, but even just rewatching it today, you can pick up on those things. Because yeah, the first time you watch it, you think that Anton's like really concerned for her, but then actually you find out how much of a sick, awful human being he is, and really he's actually selfish because he's thinking there, fuck, I have no use for her now, and I can't use her for my personal gain. So like you say, it completely changes the performance and the tone, and because you know what's underneath the curtain and you know his motives. So yeah, it's totally different.
I don't know. I think I just like, because I've spent most of the day listening to the news about that girl who had just, like, her remains have just been found, and it was a police officer that's in custody for her murder and things like that. And all day on the news, they've been doing like phone-in shows about, you know, women telling of their experiences, you know, things like not being able to walk home at night alone, and men making them feel unsafe and things like that. So I don't know if I just had that in my head that I immediately went to, he is raging because she's not got a hand anymore. Like, not because of what we were then found out in terms of the whole grooming plot or that, just because I thought he was a dickhead man.
Yeah, well, maybe you picked up on it a lot quicker than us, but I definitely, on like the first watch, I was like, especially at this point as well, I still think it's a revenge story between Charlotte and Lizzie. So I do think, oh, he must be concerned, because I still assume at this point that Charlotte's jealous of Lizzie and how much she's loved by Anton. But yeah, on the second watch, it is not even like with the knowledge in hand. It's like if you closely watch him, he's fucking raging. But I think based on your assumptions of the relationship between Charlotte and Lizzie and Anton's place at the academy, you think he is like a father figure to these girls, and is far from that.
I know I'm possibly jumping ahead a little bit, but I want to know like what you think of Paloma in this whole sort of plot line. Do you think she's someone who's just either been like under his spell? Is she being groomed by him as well? Or is she an accomplice to him?
I think you could argue both. Like certainly in grooming rings, like paedophile rings where they groom young girls and young boys, there will be someone a bit older who they maybe give a little bit more attention to, who they then get to recruit other people in. But just because they are getting people in doesn't also mean that they're not being abused. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit of that, because she comes out with this, what's expected of us, like totally nonsense.
No, that's why I wanted to get your opinion on it, because exactly that, exactly what you say. Lucy?
I think it can be both. At the right up until the last few scenes, I am, like you say, you can argue both. I am under the impression that she is under his spell, and as we say, in grooming situations, in any abusive situation, to be honest, it is incredibly hard for you to recognize you are in an abusive situation sometimes, and we don't know the full backstory between Paloma and Anton, but at the end, when she comes in to the chapel and you can see the joy on her face and she's taking part, I think then I was kind of like, okay, she is an accomplice. Like, I think at the end I kind of saw her a bit more as an accomplice. It's, you know, she's been through awful things, but it doesn't justify what her actions, and yeah, at the end I kind of saw her a bit more as a villain.
I saw her more as a villain towards the end as well, but I can entirely see the other side of it. So I was just interested to get your thoughts on that.
So as we were just talking about there, Anton, we get the feeling as soon as Lizzie comes back that he's got no use for her anymore, and that kind of fear is confirmed, where like basically the next day is like, you need to go. Like, I don't have room for you here anymore. Like, they just talk about how they need to, like, fill her space with somebody else. And it's so unfair, because you see from the flashback scenes, like, they're taken in at a really young age. Like, this is really her family. And then because of something that really, like, isn't her fault, well, it isn't her fault at all, they kick her out. Go on.
Oh, no, sorry. I was just going to say that, you know, you were mentioning, Lindsay, how, like, on a second watch, a third watch, like, the scenes totally change. That scene with Lizzie, when she's begging Anton to stay, that almost speaks volumes on a second watch, finding out what happened to her, because it just shows how brainwashed she is, because, like, she has an out there, and she is still desperate to stay.
I know, it's, like, it's so sad watching it, because, yeah, it's like you say, on the second watch, you've said I feel like Charlotte's sense checking, like, is she as brainwashed as what I was? And then this scene kind of confirms it to the viewer, like, yeah, like, she really is. She's put no idea that she's been abused. And that's the thing about abuse as well that I don't think a lot of people talk about, is that, like, even with, like, sexual abuse and stuff like that as well, it's like, oh, if you've been abused, why haven't you done anything about it, like, gone to the police and all the rest of it? Like, sometimes it takes you years to work through things and then actually realise that you were abused. So then when, you know, all the evidence, like, physical evidence, such like there's no such thing. So when people are like, oh, why don't you just go to the police? It's like, sometimes it takes a really long time to work through that trauma and realise what actually happened to you in the first place.
It's just, it can take so long to process that, you know, like, the human, because it's such a traumatic experience, the natural reaction of the body and the brain is to just try and compartmentalize, like, it's to compartmentalize it, you know, and just sort of tuck it away in a box in your brain to never really come out again, you know. So I think for those people who do say things like, oh, well, why don't you just go to the police, or why don't you just do this, number one, you're forced, you know, you might not even if you do realize what's happened, you might not just be willing to have to go through it and live it again, because that's what coming forward with your experience means. It means living it again, having to go through that trauma again and explaining it probably countless times as well.
And let's be honest, the criminal justice system in the States and the UK is awful for survivors of abuse, especially women. So, like, I don't blame people for not wanting to come forward when 9 times out of 10, people don't believe them. Or, like, say the justice system just doesn't provide support for victims.
Exactly. So after Lizzie's basically been thrown out by Anton and Paloma, she lingers on Charlotte's portrait on the wall and punches it, and then the camera does this 360 spin, and that's a way of indicating that rather than crying about it, Lizzie is going to take some action against Charlotte. So then we jump across the country to Minneapolis, into Charlotte's home, where Lizzie breaks in and she starts kicking the shit out of Charlotte. And at this point, you're like, you deserve that. You made that lassie cut her hand off.
Like, I'm sitting there going, this revenge plot's going to end really fucking quickly.
I guess, yeah. So, well, what did you think when you seen this happening and then we cut to Charlotte in the back of Lizzie's car? Like, what are you thinking is going to happen?
I was just going to say, when Lizzie opened the boot, I thought Charlotte was going to be dead. I don't know if anyone else thought that. I thought there was going to be a body there.
I the only reason I didn't think that was because she was the poster girl for the film and essentially our main character. So I just assumed with the length of time that was, obviously I could have been entirely wrong. So I didn't assume she was dead. I didn't really know what to think at this point. Like, I was like, why are you taking her back there? Like, this guy's clearly, you know, just a dick. You know, he's kicked you out because someone chopped your hand off. Well, she chopped her own hand off, but someone made her chop her hand off. Did she really think? You know, this, obviously we know later that this isn't the case, but at this point I'm like, do you really think that he's going to take you back just because you brought him Charlotte? You know, like, I was a bit confused with what was going on at this point.
I think I do get that confusion, but I think it speaks to the desperation of Lizzie. Like, she's so desperate to come back, she thinks, oh, if I bring Charlotte, that'll do it. Well, that's what I certainly thought on a first watch anyway. Like, she's just so, like, crazed at this point. She'll just do anything to get back in.
Something that kind of confused me a little bit was just why Anton actually sent her away, because she obviously is privy to this knowledge that, you know, Anton is actually grooming people, he's abusing people, and you'd think he'd actually want to keep her, even though she's maybe no longer used to him in terms of performing, you'd think he'd actually want to keep her close to him.
I don't know, I think that just speaks to the arrogance of abusers. Like, he feels like he's got her so under the thumb that she would never do that to him, ever.
I'm maybe giving him too much credit.
Maybe, but yeah, I do get that train of thought, but I just think, yeah, he's so arrogant and he's got her so under the thumb that he thinks he's safe.
Yeah. Okay, I get that.
What do you think, Lucy?
Yeah, and this time I think he's obviously been in what he deems a position of power for so long, and like you say, like, it's his father and his grandfather that founded the, I forgot the name of the school, that's awful, but I was gonna say Briarcliff Manor.
Asylum.
Oh no, that's asylum. Yeah,
in American Horror.
That's Bly Manor. No, that's Bly Manor.
No. I'm still thinking about the shit on the bus, but but yeah, I think the whole family have been in positions of power for so long, and he's like you say, he's got her so under the thumb, and he's probably had many victims under the thumb over the years that he thinks he's basically invincible at this point, and he thinks nothing can happen to him.
Yeah, definitely. So now that Charlotte's back at the academy, this is where we get the confrontation moment and then the flashback to Charlotte's time at the back of the academy. What did you think about this revelation?
I was waiting for Lucy to go
I don't know. It's a difficult one because, like, kind of like I'd said at the start, I think it's a really big twist. I didn't expect it. The scene, even though you don't see much, it made me really uncomfortable. I think it's fine to be uncomfortable. I think sometimes we need that in films.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I've seen a lot of back and forth of people about this twist and how they don't know how they feel about having a twist regarding sexual abuse like this. And I really don't know how to feel about it. I'm really conflicted. I don't know what you guys think.
I feel like you maybe could have got like the same effect like without the sexual abuse aspects of it, because there's so much gaslighting in the language that is used. But I also think, there is opportunities to pad this film out a bit more. Because they make reference to the fact that all the students throughout the whole time of Bakov Academy have been taught the same. So that implies that Anton, Theus and Jeffrey have also been abused and raped.
Yeah, because he constantly says near the end, I'm teaching you the way that my father and my grandfather's taught me.
Mm.
Doesn't he? He says that a few times. And so was Theus? Is it Theus?
Yeah, Theus and Jeffrey are the other two.
They were the same as well. So there was I definitely got that. Like, I picked up on that and assumed that he had been abused and they had been abused as well.
Not that like gives him an excuse, but I do feel like there's opportunity to pad this section of the story out a bit to make it seem less shock value.
Yeah, sometimes people, like you say, even though, you know, he's entirely a complete dickhead abuser in this film, he is still also a victim.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I think as well, during this scene as well, there's a lot of like gaslighting / like cult like language being used, but there's also like, they reference God and stuff a lot, which kind of makes me like want to keep using like the cult-like language. And again, I think there was just an opportunity to maybe pad that out a bit more, because I'm just like, oh, where does this come from? When he starts talking about God and stuff, like, I know it's called the chapel and things, but there's no like religious iconography in it. Like,
they
just kind of shove it in at the end.
It
and
feels
like
they've tried to make some deeper points, but have really rushed through the ending of this film. Mm. You know, it feels like, and the film's only an hour. I think the film's an hour and a half on the nose, to be honest. Yeah. I think, so there's absolutely no reason why you couldn't have put in an extra 10 minutes in this film and still had it be Obviously, I get that some people don't want their films to be overly long and things like that, but there's absolutely no reason why you couldn't have had another 10 minutes in to pad out some of this, to maybe give a quick, even just like a quick 30-second flashback scene to Anton as a child, going, obviously not seeing the abuse, but potentially going through a potentially abusive situation, or to give some sort of links to the sort of terminologies that they're using here as well. I felt that this sort of big end scene was a little bit rushed.
Yeah, I would agree.
But what I will say as well is the part that made me feel really uncomfortable, it might sound a bit odd, it's actually the part where he's got Zhang Li back in the room and he just like brushes her shoulder and she shivers.
Mm.
Like, I don't know if you saw that. That was like, she knows at that point that there's something no right about this.
Yeah. I mean, like, one thing I will say is, like, I do kind of agree, about the kind of twist. Like, I don't know if it was really appropriate, but I do think it's really well done. I feel like the actress that plays the younger version of Charlotte, like, does a lot with, like, you get straight away that impression of someone who's being abused. Like, she's not looking people in the eye, like, those little like cracks in her voice, like the way they film it, and she's like looking out the door, and then you see her imagination like wanting to run away. You're just like, you're so there. And I think they probably could have kept an abuse aspect of it, but maybe not sexual abuse, because it does just feel a bit like, not like forced in per se, but it's like there for shock value.
Yeah, I think so.
because you even have that scene before that where they talk about perfection and achieving the perfection, and Anton is screaming at Charlotte. Like, they could have just had
that's
that.
Yeah, because that's abuse. That's emotional.
That is abuse, and that
emotional.
Is a powerful scene.
Absolutely.
Because, not that I've seen it, but there was a film that came out a few years before that, Whiplash, and it's kind of about, like, the very abusive relationship between a musician and their instructor. But, of course, it's two men. So it's like, as well, because it's a girl, we'll add the sexual aspect into it, whereas they could have just made it like emotional abuse, mental abuse.
Definitely.
You know, and it still would have had the same effect.
Definitely. Whiplash is a great film, by the way. J.K. Simmons is awesome in it.
Yeah, he won the Oscar for it, and yeah. I just love him in general, so yeah, I need to watch it. So yeah, after a little flashback scene, Charlotte's bound and gagged, and then she's taken to the chapel and she's shackled to the performance stage, and he wants the perfection out of her, and like you say, he brings in Zhang Li and threatens that he will make Zhang Li pay the price, as he refers to it, rather than Charlotte, if she messes up. One of my favourite parts of this film is actually this scene where she is playing, and all of the performances are non-verbal, and there's all these subtle things that you can tell what each and every character's thinking, and even when she plays that one note wrong, you feel the whole mood of the room change, and it's completely non-verbal, and I think it's one of the best scenes in the film for me. What did you guys think?
I completely agree with you, which you'll be delighted to hear. You don't hear me say that too often, but no, I completely agree with you, because I'm someone as well who is completely tone deaf, right? So all through the like first part of our performance, I'm sitting there and I'm going, I don't fucking know if she's playing this right or wrong, because I couldn't tell my arse from my elbow when it comes to music or anything like that. But as soon as she played that note wrong, and it's right at the end as well, it's right at the end, so she does everything perfectly up until that point, and then it's right at the very end, and like you say, you can see even just in like the slightest head tilt, like I think Paloma, just she doesn't really change her expression on her face, but for some reason you can just sense this complete shift in thought from her and from the other characters as well. Like, you know, as soon as that happens, I immediately anyway went, oh shit, like, she's fucked this up, this guy's a way to fucking rape this wee girl or something.
Yeah, what did you think, Lizzie?
I absolutely love this scene as well. I think like having that, you're kind of like holding your breath up until that moment because the stakes are so high, and you're here like watching it, like can't take your eyes off the screen, and I think the way they filmed it was really good. Like, when she messes up the note, the camera like jiggles a little bit as well.
Yeah.
I really liked that. I thought that was a nice touch. And yeah, they don't have to say anything, but you already know that the atmosphere has completely switched, and you can see it in their eyes, and you just absolutely dread what's coming next. Hello, Blossom.
Getting caught up in all my cables. Yeah, when Zhang Li's clapping, oh, she's such a sweet, polite wee girl, isn't she?
She is.
I'd have gotten up and be like, "You fucked up that note at the end, bringing me out my bed for this."
I know, but she's clapping and it's so tense, and she's just like still smiling, like, "Oh, what's going on? Like, this is so awkward." So then, and it's when Anton declares after this, I'm not just some random pervert. He knows what he's doing.
Oh, you're a very specific pervert, yeah. Dick.
I know. So, Paloma takes Zhang Li to bed. Anton says, give me a shout when she stops biting. And Lizzie says, I know, Lizzie says, I'm going first, right? And the first time I watched this, I was dry heaving at the thought of her putting that stump inside Charlotte dry. Like, that made me feel physically ill.
This is the point where I think it's totally unnecessary.
Mm.
Like, Why have we got this here? Like, we don't need to see this. We get it. Like, you've done so well at this point, being like with the subtlety. Like, even if it was sexual abuse, like, I know we were saying it didn't necessarily have to be sexual abuse, it could have just been emotional or mental or whatever else. But even if they were going for sexual abuse, we get it.
It's like the way the stage as well, because obviously we haven't seen anything up until this point, but we've seen her feet shackled to the stage. We see that her arms are shackled, and then I can't remember which one it is, but Theodore Jeffrey pulls some lever, and it's like this whole stage has been set up for them to rape wee lasses. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I only noticed that like on my third watch today, but it was just, you know, when I know that Lizzie, I feel like Lizzie's just trying to meet their energy and be like as disgusting as them, but in the film where she's like taking off her bandages and that, I was not well, because that it made me feel really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So then we learned that Lizzie actually poisoned all the drinks and Theus and Jeffrey die.
Then
they have a wee kissy.
So satisfying to see them drop dead. I was like, oh, thank fuck, because like it could.
Did they say anything in this film? Did they have any lines?
I don't think so.
Were their entire characters non-verbal? I know we see them in the beginning, but I don't remember if they said anything or not.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
No, I've no point around that. I was just curious. I couldn't remember if I'd heard them sort of say anything. So this whole sort of persona and character and emotion that we're attributing to them, they've managed to do completely non-verbally throughout the entire film.
True. But, so then we get another reverse moment. How did you feel when Lizzie and Charlotte kissed? You're just like, I remember feeling like relief that they're not in this rivalry. I'm just like, oh, I'm so glad they're together again. Did you think the same?
I thought that the film was just going to end. And to be honest with you, it's going to sound bizarre, I kind of forgot about Anton. And just thought that the film, this was the ending, we're going to have a nice happy ending. And then obviously we move on to Anton. I'm like, oh yeah, this cunt.
So like the first reversal, we go back to the point where Lizzie is kicking the shit out of Charlotte, and she realises, and she says to Charlotte that Charlotte was right about Anton the whole time, and it's Lizzie who actually says, I want to get my revenge on Anton, and Charlotte says that she'll help her, she'll do anything for her. And I think this is a really nice moment, because obviously what Charlotte did to Lizzie was really, really fucking extreme, but she's always had Lizzie's best interests at heart, and at the end of the day these two classes like don't really know each other, and she's just like, I'll help you do anything, and I just think that's really nice, and I think it speaks to just like girls as well, like girls should support girls, women should support women, and I'm so for this relationship.
I thought it was really powerful. I know we mentioned earlier that you know, with the sexual abuse and things like that, it didn't have to be as explicit, but I do think that seeing two victims come together and become survivors and take their revenge is really satisfying to watch. And as you say, Lindsay, it pushes that message of women supporting women as well, because it very much could have been that plot where there's this miscommunication and then they kill each other, and or it's just a bloodbath and everyone dies or something like that. So the fact that they get to have this like as happy as an ending they can in the circumstances, it was satisfying to see. I think I thought it was a good twist to have. I thought it doesn't justify the explicit scenes in my mind, but I thought that they turned it around, because at this point I was a bit like, I don't know where this is going to go, and I don't know how I feel about this. So it made me happy to see them kiss.
I think what as well, the other thing is, like, obviously these two people who have been sexually abused, who have been groomed, like you say, are getting this revenge on their abuser. And I think when you think of real life cases of people who have been sexually abused, and even if their abuser eventually goes to prison, for example, which doesn't happen anywhere near enough, for some people that's not closure, you know, that's not enough, that's not revenge, you know. They still have to go on and deal with all the other issues that are associated. They're still affected by this for the rest of their life. So the fact that these two were actually able to get some sort of revenge, and I don't really think you'd find many people out there who would disagree with you that, you know, rapists and child molesters and things deserve the absolute worst punishments in the world. So yeah, I think that definitely speaks to how satisfying a conclusion this is.
Another thing I like about this film, and it's kind of most highlighted when we move into the final chapter, Duet, and it's kind of interspersed throughout the whole film, is all the work that Charlotte has actually put in to try and deal with some of the issues she's had post-abuse. You know, we see all those scenes of her in and out of mental institutions and having electroshock therapy. Like, obviously we see the aftermath with her self-harm scars, and well, this is jumping forward slightly, but one of the complaints that some people have about this film is that close-up on Charlotte's face when like Lizzie is going at him with the meat cleaver, and I disagree with that, because like, Charlotte's paralysed, but she's also, you know, getting some joy out of the revenge. And I think you can have more than one emotion at the same time. And I don't think people understand that with Charlotte's reaction in this scene, that she's experiencing multiple emotions at the same time. And I don't think we should be telling people how to feel in these sorts of situations. What do you guys think about that?
I think definitely, you know, with the multiple emotions things, because ultimately this is still, you know, some people might, if this was anyone else, they might still feel some sort of affinity towards this person, you know? Mm. They might still feel like this is the person who gave me, like, helped me develop this gift or brought me up through, like, you know, there might still be those sorts of aspects to it. So then you're feeling a whole range of emotions, from anger to love compassion and everything else that's in between, and that's a very confusing mix of emotions. So I think anyone who's saying that is a little bit off the mark, to be honest with you.
Trauma is an incredibly complex thing. Any form of trauma, if anyone's been in a toxic relationship, any relationship of any kind, it doesn't have to be a romantic relationship, it can be family, it can be friends, anything like that, you feel multiple things, because it's more than one thing. It's a completely complex situation. And we also have to recognize as well that Charlotte is incredibly mentally unwell, as is probably Lizzie, but we get the, you know, the real word where Charlotte's been in mental institutions for most of her life after what happened, and, you know, with the trauma of her mum and stuff as well. So it's completely understandable that she's going to be feeling different things, you know?
So yeah, after the kind of like interspersions of the flashbacks of the ECT, Anton grabs a knife and slices right through Charlotte's arm.
Bastard.
I know, but that looks so, like, so painful, and I think that special effect is really well done as well.
Yeah.
So then we see Lizzie beating Anton with a poker, and while this is happening, like, Charlotte's almost fantasizing about that version of her who was abused by Anton escaping back off, and I thought that was really nice. Like, it's the way it's shot and stuff, like, it seems very, like, almost like fairy tale like, dreamlike, and like, I want Charlotte to have that feeling of escaping from that part of her life. So I was really happy to see her have that. So one of the parts of the film that people do think is the most shocking is what happens to Anton. What did you think at his reveal in the end?
You can go first, Lucy.
I thought, like, it's satisfying. Because, like, you know, he deserves But, you know, death isn't a big enough punishment for him. So let him suffer like that, I thought was really, really smart. This is the only special effect I kind of was a bit like, oh, like, I think the special effects in this are done really well, but I don't know. I almost kind of giggled at the end. I don't know. I just wasn't expecting it. And I was just, I found it a little bit funny.
So, yeah, I'm on board with the sentiment behind this scene in terms of you want to see him get his comeuppance. There's no real punishment that would have really been satisfactory in terms of, have we all got the noisiest cats tonight?
Yes.
There's no real punishment that would have been satisfactory for the sort of crimes that he's committed. However, I have several issues with regards to the effects that Lucy has already mentioned. I think they were for effect, because effects are relatively sparse in this film, but what effects were used were, I thought, in general, used very, very well, but the this one at the end was not. Like, this was poor, and I was with Lucy, like, I almost was laughing at it. But I have some issues around continuity as well, in terms of this whole sort of big finale scene, and that goes back as well to the sort of the fight scene, if you will, because I, number one, right, they fucking, Charlotte has like a hairdo, a hairstyle change in the middle of all this, and nobody notices she's wearing a wig. So, like, that confused me. After she escapes, they take the time to get changed. And I was like, you probably wouldn't do that as well. And something else as well, and that was it. Like, I got a bit confused about passage of time from them chopping off his arms and legs, because he's all sewn up in that scene. So is there a passage of time between them doing that and then them doing this sort of duet performance? Because...
yeah, so, like, the implication of the ending is, obviously, he's got all his limbs cut off, he's had his genitals removed, he's had his eyes and mouth sewn shut, so only his ears are open, and they've done that so that he is, like, forced to listen to them. For as long as they see fit. So the implication is that he has just been sitting there the way they've been keeping him alive with the IV, and they've been performing.
But that's not the issue. Like, I get that. That's not the issue I have. The issue I have is there's no way. They're not surgeons. So how have they kept him alive? There's no way they're chopping off all four of his legs and keeping him alive with the simply just down to blood loss. You know?
True.
So that was just... they overstretched, in my opinion. I think they were absolutely right to show that there was some sort of comeuppance, but I think they way overstretched in what is humanly possible. I do not believe that this would have been possible. I completely understand the sentiment behind it in terms of, like you're saying, with him only really being able to hear the perfection, as it's you know, called, and it's only when, you know, they're working together that they're able to achieve the perfection, you know. And I think that's a very nice message as well, is that when people work together, they can overcome anyone and they can achieve anything, and that's a great message. But they overstretched in the visuals, and that's so disappointing, because the message is so strong and so powerful.
I was just gonna say, I do get what you mean, like, in terms of, like, the message of, like, working together, like, you achieve things when you work together, because when I watched this for the second time, I actually completely forgot about Anton's fate, because the image of, like, Lizzie and Charlotte playing together on the cello is just so striking that I completely forgot about what happened to Anton. I just was like, oh yeah, they killed him. And then when I seen it, I was like, oh shit. So you probably would have got the same effect if they had just killed him.
I think for me, it's just a combination of the implausibility of it and the fact that the effects are so poor that it just take it. It's really a shame, because the ideas they've got there are really great. Mm. They really are great. And it's ultimately, to top off, it's a good film. Like, you know, I think we're all going to come out of this with positive ratings and things like that when we get to it. It just left a sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I think if they'd had that last scene where maybe they had like all the bodies in the chapel and then it was them playing the cello together, that would have had the same effects. Like you said, that last scene of them playing together is so striking. Mm. And the special effects of Anton almost takes away from that, which is a shame because it's done so well.
I don't think you need to keep him alive. Have him fucking strung up on the wall with his guts hanging out. Just show that they gave him the grisliest of deaths. And I think you'd have had a very similar effect, to be honest with you. I think the fact that they've... Yeah. I'm just repeating myself now.
So yeah, that's the film, basically. We've spoken a really long time about it. Just with that last scene as well, like we were all saying that how much we really liked it. That final scene of them playing the cello together is actually what made Alison Williams sign on to the film. She just loved it so much. I'm glad we're on the same page as her with that one.
Actually, you know what? Just to add as well, because obviously in this scene when they're playing together, has she had her arm surgically repaired?
But that's the thing.
Because that's what confused me.
When I was doing a bit of research into it, her arm has been amputated, the one that Anton...
Yeah, because that's when I was getting really confused about passage of time. Because that really sort of confused me, as if to say, well, if she's had her arm surgically repaired, how has no one else found out about that? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it just, it all got very blurred for me at the end. That confused me. That was my other point that I'd forgotten.
So there's a lot of like real life things that some people think The Perfection was inspired by, but I think it's just more of a case of obviously these issues are so systemic that when the writers were writing this film, a lot of things just kind of came to head at the same time. So a lot of people, for example, think that this film is inspired by the Harvey Weinstein scandal, when it was actually announced 3 weeks prior to the big expose in the New Yorker. This film brought up a lot of feelings for me regarding like many big events that were happening. That issues are really similar to this. So like a lot of people go straight to Weinstein. And my first thought was the USA Gymnastics scandal with Larry Nassar abusing hundreds of little girls and all the pressure those young girls are put under to perform to an Olympic standard. Like, did this film bring up any feelings regarding those things for you, or not really?
I think for me, when you look at any of these sorts of big cases, whether that's the Weinstein or the gymnastics or even things like, you know, the Jimmy Savile and stuff like that, there's patterns, there's similar patterns in each and every single one of them, isn't there? Like, these people have an MO, and abusers all generally kind like have a very similar MO. There's always these very similar sorts of red flags, I find. And I think that's where, you know, this can bring up thoughts of it, of really so many different stories and cases and examples of grooming and abuse. I think the gymnastics one is probably the most apt in terms of this film, but I think you can read into it much wider, and I don't think any one specific probably did have the influence. I think it was probably just an amalgamation of how abusers actually behave.
But well, it's the thing with like Weinstein actually happened like before they started making the after they started making the film, and the same with Larry Nassar, like the trial was playing out as they were prepping for the film, so none of these things actually inspired the film.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's just that it just so happened that all those things kind of came to a head while the film was coming out.
That would have also been the time of Epstein as well, or Epstein would have been just after Jeffrey Epstein and the case with him.
I can't remember exactly when, but I think you're right. I think it would have been about that time.
One of the other things about this film that I thought was really interesting is that it's actually really heavily inspired by Korean cinema. particularly the kind of like genre blending in it. If you look at films like Old Boy and The Handmaiden and Parasite as well, these films start one way, have massive twists and go another way. And Shepherd like was really inspired by this because he feels like American cinema like doesn't go far enough, and he really wanted something that like pushed the boundaries. And I do think he does achieve that with this film.
Yeah, definitely. Like I totally get that, especially with Parasite. You know, I remember going to the cinema to see that and expecting one thing and getting something just so wildly different to what I was expecting and kind of being blown away by it a little bit. And I definitely get that sense that sometimes, I don't necessarily think it's a case that sometimes American films don't go far enough. I think they just have a really difficult time judging exactly where far enough is, because I think you sometimes will get a lot of films that go way too far.
Mm.
And then some films that won't go anywhere near far enough. And I think what I personally think is that they've really struggled to find that, I hate calling it the sweet spot, but you get my point.
Yeah. What do you think, Lucy?
If anything, this has encouraged me to watch more Korean cinema then, because I really haven't watched that many. And like I said, this, if anything, this movie, it's really different from anything that I've seen before. I love the plot, and I get where you're coming from. It's not to say that American cinema doesn't push it, but even maybe the way that we tell narrative in Western cinema, you know, we always have a beginning, middle, and end. It's that kind of equilibrium. That's how our films flow. It's how TV flows. Whereas this, the reveals and the rewind and all this kind of stuff, it's not something that we tend to get a lot of, especially in horror. So I think maybe it's the way that we portray a narrative and a story. It doesn't have to be so linear. So yeah. I really like that.
I don't think we've ever covered anything on this show that's like this.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of those sorts of aspects as well.
So that was all my talking points, really. Do you guys have anything else you want to add about the film?
No. I think we went into quite a lot of detail there, to be honest.
Yeah, we did.
I've got some amount of fucking editing today for this episode. I thought last week was bad enough.
I had one thing I wanted to add. That's okay. It's only because... It was only because I was looking at some threads about people's opinions of this movie, because like I said, I really did like this movie, and I really wanted to like it because I know how much you like it as well, Lindsay. But I was looking at people's arguments about it and what their criticisms of it. One criticism I have seen is tropes regarding black women. And I've seen a couple people make the argument that, you know, Lizzie has to give up everything for us to have this kind of ending, you know, with her arm chopping off, and she has to go to such extremes. I've seen a couple people arguing that that's, you know, they maybe didn't go about that the right way, because that is a bit of a trope that black women have to go through all these sufferings for the white protagonist to get their ending. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on it and what you think.
It's very true, and I was actually thinking about that in regards to like a different film. We've not come anywhere near close enough to the right portrayal of black women in cinema. They're either, like you say, given everything up or just actually like really replaceable. Like, yeah. The director like does mention the fact that obviously like Logan Brown is a black woman and how they had to change some aspects of the film, but it does make me think, what did you change? Because it's still full of the same tropes. Obviously, like, he didn't go far enough.
I mean, when I was watching the film, it wasn't something that I particularly picked up on, but I guess I'm just not really looking at it from that sort of aspect. That's part of probably my white privilege, you know, that I don't have to sort of look at it that aspect. But I completely understand. I completely understand that train of thought.
I thought it was just worth raising, and you know, I had noticed it, but like it wasn't at the forefront of my mind. It wasn't until I started researching after and somebody brought this up and I was like, oh, that's actually a very good point. You know, it's not the first time we're probably going to see this. It's been time and time again, but I thought it was just worth raising.
Oh, I mean, we're going to discuss this probably hundreds of times in the movies that we're going to be covering, because it's such a common theme. It's just one that I think it was probably slightly more subtle here. I think there are much more explicit examples of it, but when someone brings it up and you watch it again or you think about it again, those themes are definitely there.
Agreed. Have you got anything else you want to bring up before we go into the trivia?
No.
Not from me.
Okay. So let's get into the trivia then. So because it's a Netflix original, we don't have any figures, which is a bit... annoying. There's not a huge amount of trivia for this. One thing that people might find interesting if they're musically inclined, when Anton asks Zhang Li to sing an A sharp, she does indeed actually sing a perfect A sharp, which indicates that the character has perfect pitch, which is a really rare talent. So when they're talking about her being like the next big protege, like that's like a little subtle thing that's put in there to make you even more aware that, yeah, indeed she is going to be the next big music protege. And my last little bit of trivia is that Alison Williams and Logan Browning did actually play together in the end. Like, it's not any special effects or anything, like they are actually playing the cello together at the end. They learned separately with their instructors and they would practice together whenever they got the chance on set. That's all I've got for you, unless you have anything to add.
I haven't got any extra trivia to add, but see, if someone told me, oh, sing a note in A sharp, I'd that would be me fucked. Like, straight off the bat, I'd just be like, I don't fucking know what that means, to be honest with you. I'm so tone deaf. I know I've said it already, but it's bad. I tried to sing A sharp to Kari, and apparently I got it horrendously wrong. Like, not even close.
Well, that's like why people like say, like, oh, don't sing a cappella and stuff, because it's really, really difficult to stay on pitch.
I mean, I can't sing anyway. Like, you've heard me attempt it. I'm not singing in any style, let alone a cappella.
Lizzie, have you got anything to add?
All I can think of, but I think that for people that are music fans, that little attention to detail, they're really going to appreciate it. And also, like, we've talked about how striking that scene is of Lizzie and Charlotte at the end. That's probably my favourite scene of all of them, is that last shot. And, like, to know that the amount of effort that they went into actually play together, it really pays off at the end, because it's done so well.
Definitely. So with that being said, let's get into our final ratings.
The excitement in your voice.
So
We've made people wait 2 fucking hours for this.
I know. That'd be good. IMDb have rated it a 6.1 on Metacritic. It's got a 60% rating. Let's play everyone's favourite game and guess what the Rotten Tomatoes critics said. So Lucy, what do you think the critics have rated The Perfection?
Well, as we usually say, the critics are quite harsh, and just based on Metacritic, I'm just going to use that as a sampler. I'm going to say 65%.
65. What say you, Ian?
I don't know. I think there's enough subtext here that some of the critics might actually really like this. I'm going to go a bit higher. I'm going to give it 80.
So Lissy, no, who does take this one?
Oh, it's right in the middle.
Oh, it's kind of. It's 72.
What did you say? 65.
I said 65.
She takes
yeah.
it. She takes it by one. She's seven by away. One. She's seven away. I'm eight away. You. Oh.
So, what do we think the audience scored it on Rotten Tomatoes? Let's see, you can go first again as soon as you won.
I think the audience would have scored it higher. I'm going to say. I'm going to go to 78.
I think the opposite. I think the audience are going to like this in general less than the critics. I'm going to go for standard comedy 69.
Ian takes it this time. The audience rated it 58.
Oh, that's awful.
Harsh. Yeah, it's awful low.
I thought, I don't know, like, I don't want to say that the audience is stupid, but the audience is stupid. Like, you know, that like this is a film that's got a lot of, you kind of need to dig, and I feel like a lot of people are just not willing to do that digging.
I don't know. I think, I mean, there's a reason we've turned this into a game. Like, I don't think you can ever really predict what they're gonna say, because even like 72 is quite high when you put it against IMDb and Metacritic. Like,
I think the thing is, today is like 72 is still a very much positive score. That still means that 3 out of 4 critics really like this movie. I think there sometimes is a little bit of a tendency to think, and from myself as well, to see a score like 70% and think, oh, that's could be better. That still is a very positive score.
So the Rotten Tomatoes critics consensus was led by a pair of compelling performances. The Perfection is a smart, gripping thriller that barbs with its wild twists with a cutting wit. Do we agree?
I would say so.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Ian wasn't listening.
I think it's very cunning, and it's a very, like, I know we've said it time and time again now, but it's just, it's very different for traditional Western horror cinema. It's not something that we really see in the mainstream, and for a Netflix movie as well, like, not really seen Netflix do anything like this before either.
Definitely, because their horrors can be very hit or miss. So with that being said, let's get into our own ratings. So Lucy, out of 10, what do you rate The Perfection?
I really went back and forth on this, but I do really like this movie. There is a couple issues I have with it in terms of the way it represents sexual abuse and stuff like that, but overall I think it's a really good movie. I think it's something totally different, so with that I'm going to give it an 8. 8 out of 10.
Ian, what say you?
I feel like every single week we all go, oh, this was a really tough one. I really went back and forth on this. I feel like we say that every single week at this point. Obviously, like, I've obviously brought up issues that I had, and they're not necessarily issues with the themes that I have. You know, I have a bit of issues around the sort of continuity at the end. I still feel like the overall ending was a little rushed. You know, I feel like we could have just put an extra 5-10 minutes in here, and I think we would have gotten a much, much more well-rounded story right there at the end. And I have issues around the sort of whole timeline of what's happened at the end, and how far they've gone on the screen, and just, you know, a couple little issues like that, which I don't want to say spoiled the ending for me, because I don't necessarily think it did spoil the ending for me, but it definitely left me with a, like I said earlier, a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth, in terms of I really didn't feel that it took me out of it so much, and I just wanted it to be such a satisfactory ending, but I felt like I didn't really get that because it took me out of it itself. But aside from that, you know, most of the effects in this movie are really well done. There's loads of great subtext. Like I say, it's something that we haven't seen before. We haven't even really talked that much about quality of acting. All the performances are really, really good. There's some really chilling scenes. I'm going to give it a 7.
Okie dokes. Yeah, I agree with a lot of what both of you have just said. I think Alison Williams especially is kind of proven herself to be like a really great horror actress. I can't wait to see what she does next. She was amazing in Get Out. She's amazing in this. It's not unknown that I absolutely love this film. There are a few things I think that could be padded out a little bit more, just to add that slightly more depth to, well, just to it all, really. So with that being said, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Once again, making me out to be the dick of it all with the lower rating. Fuck's sake!
I think it's still good.
I'm not gonna lie.
I'm not gonna lie. As soon as Lindsay was like, "I fucking love this film," I was instantly being like, "Right, I'm giving it a 2."
Great.
I made myself laugh. Fuck's sake. Anyways. Oh, it's my bit.
I know. I was like, we need the average score.
I've just gotten used to not doing this anymore. Right, so given the Greg's scores and our scores combined, gives The Perfection an average score of 6.5 out of 10. It puts it in 52nd place of movies that we have covered on the show. Lindsay, I could hear that eye roll.
I feel like that's way harsh. Like, see if you were like, oh, it's got a 7, I'd be like, oh, fair enough, but like 6.5, I feel like that's a bit low.
It gives it the same score as Wes Craven's The People Under the Stairs and 2011 James Wan movie Insidious.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of Insidious, a lot of other people are, and I know that you highly regard The People Under the Stairs, so it's in good company.
I would agree.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. No, People Under the Stairs is better.
I haven't even seen that, and I'll be like, yep. That's what I said it is. So that's the end of the show, guys. I hope you enjoyed all our fucking chaotic energy.
We kind of got off track a few times here.
Just a bit.
It was deep, there was lots of laughs, there was a bit of everything.
I was like, oh, this episode's not going to be really funny.
Sometimes they're the best ones, right, for everyone listening at home, because obviously we have the entire Wednesday schedule for the year planned out, like, so we know exactly what we're going to be releasing every Wednesday for the next year. Obviously all of our bonus shows are still really up for decisions and guests and whatever else, and I know you guys probably do as well, but I do look down the list relatively regularly and think, oh, that's going to be a really good discussion, or oh, that's a really shit movie. Usually that's Lucy's week.
Thanks, shady bitch.
Although Lindsay has got Zombievers later in the year.
Zombievers, like, I know it's not like a good movie, but that movie's fun as hell. Like, can't
but,
tell me
but there are definitely movies sometimes you sit there and you think, oh, this is going to be, like, I get a bit worried sometimes. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a dead dry conversation. But then I realise that we're fucking hilarious. So it's all good. It's all good. I enlightened you with my shitting out a window story, so it's fine. It's not even a story. It's not happened. I'm acting like I actually fucking did it.
Oh, no, because you'll start me crying and laughter again.
Just that fucking... I'm going to tell this story again tomorrow night in my stream.
So let's just quickly go over some of your guys' opinions on it.
Oh, I forgot about them.
So did I when I was like, right, see ya. Like, oh my God. Oh, I've got all these things to say still.
So I've got all the fucking housekeeping to do.
So Galileo, absolute queen, goddess.
Babe.
Love.
She says that it's not your common Netflix fluff piece. It is crazy from start to finish, and it's absolutely remarkable in that it speaks about abuse and feeling powerless while not making a mockery of the victims. The ending was shocking and fantastic, with 2 exclamation marks. So she really meant that.
Galileo always means what she says.
Amy of Darkness, who... Fucking excellent Twitter name, by the way.
That tickled me so much. Carry on.
you broken?
Oh, I'm just gonna mute myself.
For fuck's sake. Amy of Darkness said that she really wanted to like this film, but thrown in abuse as the twist was just gross. Made me feel more uncomfortable than the arm-severing nonsense. And Katie said that she loved this film. This definitely had a lot more twist than I was expecting. There we go, that's it.
I think all those opinions are valid, to be honest. Like, I don't really have any disagreement with that at all.
You calm down.
Hi.
Just in time to close the show. Lucy, where can people find you?
Find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Twitch, both at Lulu_Pew.
You can find this podcast absolutely everywhere. We're on Twitter at Screams Behind. We're on Facebook and Instagram, Behind Screams Podcast. We're on Twitch. When are we on Twitch? Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, and Saturday.
You got it. Well done, because I haven't got it. I butchered it last time, so well done.
So no, we're on Twitch all the time. You can subscribe to us on Patreon. If you subscribe at the £1 tier, you can get this audio. You get all this audio before everybody else. And if you subscribe at £5 tier, you can get a video version. So you can see our gorgeous faces when we speak absolute shite. Ian, is there anything else you want to say? I've forgotten anything.
Yeah, you do my Ian fucking plugs. Thank you very much. You can find me on Twitter. Ian, oh, forgot it. Hold on. You can find me on Twitter at IanForrest12 with two R's. It's me that you'll find on Twitch 3 of the 4 nights of the week. Dave, who's you'll all know from previous shows, he does our spooky Saturdays on the Twitch as well, so go show us some love there. We've had some really cool streams there in the past couple of weeks, with some awesome people dropping by, keeping me company and pretty much scaring the shit out of me, because apparently I'm just a giant fucking wuss when it comes to horror video games, but I'll play them all. I'll just scream my way through it. It's fine. So do that. Subscribe to the Patreon, please. Please.
We're also on TikTok at Behind the Screens Podcast. The next Wednesday episode is Ian's choice. Do you want to tell us what it is?
Not really.
Give us a little teaser as to why you've chosen it.
Yep, so next week I have chosen us to cover Eden Lake, which I know neither of you have seen before, so you're going into this one completely blind, which I'm quite pleased about. Picked this movie specifically, or I moved this movie into this sort of month because I really feel like it's actually one of the darker films we've got this year, and I feel like we've also got quite a strong female protagonist in this movie, and dealing with a whole sorts of lots of themes in terms of, you know, city life and country life and toxic masculinity and all that sort of themes are very much dealt with in this film, and I think it's going to be a good one to dissect. I'm very much looking forward to getting your opinions on it.
Very good. And what episode have we got coming out this Sunday?
So this Sunday, if we have got the return of previous guest Sophie to the show, we are going to be talking about The Invitation, which is a movie we discussed a little bit in our top five horror movies directed by women episode a couple of weeks ago. We're going to be talking about that. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. Last Sunday, check out last Sunday's episode as well, because we had the marvelous Emma Louise Webb on the show. And I think you all both agree with me that she is absolutely fantastic. So please go check that out and show her some love as well.
Definitely. We'll see you next week for Eden Lake. I'll be in the chief chair again. Apologies in advance. and we'll see you next week on Behind the Screams.